The Dave McGillivray Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGillivrayFoundation.org for more information.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk Sox and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
All righty. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, here with you for the full 3 hours today, which of course includes the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up 1 hour from now, where Chris Gasper will make an impassioned plea to Kyrie Irving not to play in the worthless NBA All-Star game tomorrow in Charlotte. We'll talk to Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, about Gordon Hayward and whether or not his play this week. He's indicative of what we're going to be seeing from him going forward, hopefully. And we have an update on Anthony Davis and whether or not he does or doesn't actually want to come to Boston. So all that coming up at noon, Sports Up Celtics show. We'll touch on some Patriots offseason stuff, what their priorities should be. Chris, I want to know whether or not you enjoyed the Alliance of American Football. Week 2 in that upstart league kicks off today. I want your thoughts on the NFL settling with Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid yesterday. I'm going to take a moment at one point to crow about being right about that cheap-ass golfer, Matt Kuchar, who stiffed his backup caddy and him being shamed into paying him. Finally, the internet works. But considering that we have a baseball boy here, Matt McCarthy, he is the host of Hardcore Baseball, for those of you that don't know, one of the better podcasts you can find on 98.5sportshub.com. A podcast that, by the way, I've mentioned this before, it lives up to its name. With each listen of Hardcore Baseball, you will be left a sticky, quivering mess.
Yeah, you will.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So let's start some baseball, eh, baseball boy? You good with that too, Chris?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, spring training underway. Feels like a looming labor issue in the sport, if we're not already there. Two of the biggest free agents in the sport, two of the biggest names in all of sports, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, jobless mid-February. If you told me this last summer, I would have said you were crazy, but here we are. Same goes for Craig Kimbrell. And this was someone that Chris Sale, as he showed up at spring training earlier this week in Fort Myers, Florida, talked passionately about the fact that he remains unsigned.
It's crazy to me. You know, I don't want to get too far into it, you know, with politics and baseball and all this stuff, but he's as good as it gets. He 100% makes any team better that he plays for, right? It's crazy to think that there really hasn't been a whole lot of traction with him. Obviously, with half the league just showing up for checks, doesn't help, not trying to win. Those kind of things. So then obviously your market kind of goes down a little bit, but he's earned it.
So without getting into whether or not the Red Sox should be in on him, even if it's for just 1 year, just overall, Chris, start with you. Does baseball feel broken considering that you have these names still out there floating around without a job?
It does to me in this regard. Like, when you think about what's happened since the Red Sox won the World Series and what the storylines have been, what people have been interested in, even for us, we were at the Super Bowl in Atlanta, Super Bowl 53, and all of a sudden, all this discussion, all this conjecture about what could happen in the NBA, it was huge. It was like wildfire. Everybody was interested in it. The hot stove season used to be just as interesting as the actual baseball season. Now there is no hot stove. There is like no MLB offseason to speak of that has anything interesting happening other than guys just sitting around waiting for offers that are never coming. And teams trying to squeeze them, and they show up, you know, right before spring training or right at the reporting day, which is tomorrow. I mean, I think they've sort of killed the golden goose. I mean, the hot stove was something that spurred a lot of interest in baseball, and now it doesn't exist. And I thought Brad Brock, who signed with the Cubs, had some interesting comments when he got to their camp yesterday, basically saying that it's really weird because these teams tell you, like, well, we have an algorithm that says, like, you're worth this or you'll only play this long. And he said that you'll get, like, the same offer, this was his experience, from 6 or 7 teams.
Well, Justin,
what does that sound like?
It sounds like collusion is what it sounds like. And then Justin Verlander, if you didn't see this 5 days ago, tweets, 100 or so free agents left unsigned. System is broken. They blame rebuilding, but that's BS. You're telling me you couldn't sign Bryce or Manny for 10 years and go from there? Seems like a good place to start to rebuild to me. 26 to 36, meaning the ages, is a great performance window, too. These guys are pissed, and they're right to be pissed. What's wrong with your sport there, baseball boy?
The problem is it's a strife between the owners and the players, and this is going to really rear its ugly head in a few years when the CBA is up. Baseball's headed towards a strike. And I think we can absolutely say that after what's happened the last two off seasons, this sport is headed towards a strike. And I don't think, I mean, can baseball at this point, with the way that it's trending, a strike is absolutely the worst thing that could happen to the game right now. Like, think about the damage that 1994 did and all the labor issues in baseball in the past. Can baseball handle that now? I mean, you know, that was when the game was the national pastime and the World Series getting canceled was like a disaster. If that happened now, people would just kind of shrug.
Yeah, they just watch the AAF.
The game is in deep, deep trouble. And Sale's right, you know, with half the league just showing up for checks. There's so many issues right now, but with half the league just tanking and not really, you know, wanting to invest, not really wanting to win, there's so many problems in the game right now. And the players are being hurt. I mean, you could compile a team of free agents that would make the playoffs. That's absolutely a playoff team right now. This is a real issue.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's sort of, they've crossed the Rubicon this offseason, because now you have Manny Machado and Bryce Harper out there, and the rationale before was, okay, there are older free agents, guys over 30, not in their prime. Who wants to give that guy a 5-6-7-year deal? Who wants to give that guy a David Price deal? As great as David Price was last year in the playoffs, and I think he's been very good since he got here and hasn't gotten credit for it, you look at that deal, do you think the Red Sox would do that deal again?
No.
And even Price said, when he was asked about it, when he showed up in Fort Myers, did you ever think about opting out? And he goes, no. Have you seen the free agent market? So I think when you look at it, this is entirely different. It's one thing if veteran relievers like Kimbrel aren't getting their money. I sort of get it, because I think relievers are largely fungible in Major League Baseball. That's fine. But when you have two of your marquee players, two face of the game guys just languishing out there, that's a bad look for the sport.
This wasn't even my take. I mean, the talk was, and you can back me up on this, McCarthy, the talk from you baseball people a few years ago was that when Bryce Harper was up, he was going to get a deal that was going to be around $500 million. Right. And here he is out here. Maybe he might end up slumming it for a year in San Diego for a year just so he can get a work, you know, get a job. It's unbelievable that it's come to this. I'm with you. I think, you know, a strike is going to be looming here, which could potentially kill it in a sport that, you know, doesn't really feel that competitive, especially in the American League. But it feels crazy to me that these guys are still out there, and it's February 16th. As the Red Sox are concerned, though, Craig Kimbrel, I would bring him in even for a year, three at 60. I would do that. I hate to hear this team more than any other. You know, it's either them, the Yankees, like, complain about money. And you have Dave Dombrowski this week saying, basically, what it sounded like was, we'll just figure it out, right, as it pertains to the bullpen. So it's going to be Matt Barnes, I feel like, in the eighth, and then Brazier is going to be your closer. But, all right, I get it. Craig Kimbrel was shaky in the postseason, and I can understand if that scares you away, but to me, at least on paper, you still have a massive hole there. It's crazy to me that coming off a World Series championship, they're really not addressing that. It's just, we'll figure it out.
Well, I mean, it speaks to two issues. You know, one, I would say this has always been my opinion. It scares me because I think nothing undermines a contending team faster than instability and uncertainty at the back end of a bullpen. I think it can erode the confidence of an entire ball club when you just don't know where you're going in the ninth to get those final three outs. So that's one. That concerns me, especially with a team that's built to win now. I'm not sure that's a place you can cheap out. The second thing, though, is just in our larger discussion that we're talking about. Look, the reality of this is baseball has a salary cap. Like, they don't call it a salary cap, but the whole competitive balance tax situation, and it's so onerous, and tying it to draft picks where you're losing draft picks or you're losing draft slot by 10 slots. There are teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers who normally would push their chips in the middle of the table for these free agents and say, you know, luxury tax, who cares? We'll pay it.
Right.
But now they've made it so onerous that those teams are pushing back from the table. And that has sort of a cascade effect on the rest of baseball, because now there's nobody to drive the market. When those teams push away from the table, like, who's going to drive the market? The White Sox? The Padres? Please.
Yeah. And with Craig Kimbrel, they need a closer, but they don't need him. That's the thing.
So here, you're okay with him?
I'm okay with them not bringing Craig Kimbrel back. What I'm not okay with is them basically just ignoring the bullpen. There were tons of good options out there. David Robertson went to Philadelphia for $23 million, and that's where I have an issue. Yes, I understand that the Red Sox are concerned about the luxury tax. You're the Boston Red Sox. Don't cheap out. Don't cry poor. They should have addressed this bullpen, just not with Craig Kimbrel. There's a guy who is trending in the wrong direction. The command is going away. He's not going to be the type of pitcher who can, you know, as his power diminishes as he ages, he's not going to be a finesse guy. We've seen it. He does not have the command to do that. I'm fine with them saying thanks, but no thanks. October is a preview of things to come, but they should have addressed it elsewhere.
Other than that, they show up sounding like a pretty confident group this, so far this week at spring training, and rightfully so. I mean, outside of them, the Yankees and the Houston Astros, the American League feels, incredibly weak.
Right.
I think there's going to be, unfortunately, again, a lot of completely unwatchable games against the likes of the Orioles and Royals and so on and so forth. But I think, their expectations being this high, it's warranted. Like, I could see them repeating this year. McCarthy, where are the holes outside of the bullpen?
There aren't any at this point. I mean, maybe it's second base if you have injuries there, if Pedroia can't come back, but there really aren't any. And then you've got guys who are going to be competing for their next contracts, Rick Porcello, Xander Bogaerts. There's that element too. How does that affect this team, though? I mean, listen, nobody's repeated in baseball for 20 years. It's the hardest sport of the last 20 years to repeat in, to be totally honest. But the Red Sox are built to do it. And even with the bullpen, if they have issues, you can go out and trade for a guy in July. And really, they can do that. They didn't do that last year, but it's been proven that you can find bullpen help in July. So I'm not concerned about that when it comes to the long-term prospects of this team.
And we know if they make the playoffs that, Alex Cora will just piece it together with starters. So, really, the issue is just making the, just have a good enough bullpen to make the playoffs, and they can figure it out from there.
For those that might have missed Chris Gasper's usual Friday appearance on Felger and Maz yesterday, you had a great idea what the Red Sox should do with Mookie Betts. I want you to repeat that. And McCarthy, if you missed it, I want you to hear this and weigh in as well. We come back. We're opening up talking baseball here, the old-timey baseball, on the first hour of Gasper and Murray. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Could you envision yourself playing the rest of your career in the Red Sox uniform? Everything worked out well?
I mean, yeah, if everything works out well, I love this place. I love Boston. And just one of those things where you just kind of have to see how it goes.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub. That is Mookie Betts speaking this week down at Fort Myers about his potential long-term future with the Red Sox. And Chris Gasper to my left here has a great theory as to what the Red Sox should do to make sure that that happens, or at least test the waters with him. If you missed it yesterday on Felger and Maz, you're going to repeat that. But first, though, we have breaking news.
This is breaking sports news. Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What do we got, McCarthy?
A couple of news and notes from NBA All-Star Weekend. First and foremost, Kyrie Irving says he is planning to play in the All-Star game tomorrow night. Quote, yeah, I'm good, unquote. Meanwhile, Anthony Davis speaking today. He was asked about the Boston Celtics not being on his list. Quote, they are on my list, said Davis, unquote.
Right. So that's a change from what we've heard over the last week and a half, right, about Anthony Davis supposedly not wanting anything to do with the Boston Celtics. So again, that quote is, they are on my list. So that's good news. The bad, Kyrie is going to play tomorrow in Charlotte, something that you wanted to make. Well, you already have made your passionate plea in the Boston Globe, Chris, that he shouldn't, and we'll touch more on this coming up in just about a half hour on the Sports Hub Celtics show. So again, Kyrie Irving will play tomorrow night. Anthony Davis says the Celtics on my list.
Which list for Anthony Davis? Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that more, but which, the one he'll accept a trade to, or the one he'll accept a trade to and sign long term? Because I think there's two different lists.
You've made the list. Mookie Betts, what should the Red Sox do, Chris?
Yeah, I think with Mookie, look, given everything we talked about and how soft the market is, I think there's an opportunity here for the Red Sox to structure a contract offer to him that's built sort of like the one they gave to J.D. Martinez, which has the out after 2 years. So if you look at Mookie Betts, he can be a free agent after next season, after the 2020 season. Why not go to him and offer him, say, 5 years, $150 million after this year, an extension that does that, that kicks in with 2020, and say you get an opt-out after 2 years. So that would be after 2021. Because given the way the market is now for free agents, it would lock in some security for Mookie, that if the market is still trending this way, he can just take the money. Or if in 2 years the market shifts and Mike Trout's a free agent after 2020, maybe Mike Trout is the guy who can change this, then Mookie can be a free agent after 2021 and go cash in. Also, the MLB CBA expires in December of 2021. So whatever happens there, he could benefit from. But again, he has some security there, get some money up front, a la Luis Severino. And I think here's the other thing about it from the Red Sox standpoint. You might say, well, why would you do this? I think there's two reasons. One, you're buying out a year of his free agency, so you would have him on the roster for 2021, and you'd know that going forward. Two, if you offer him this advantageous, no-lose deal, and he doesn't take it, he doesn't want to talk to you, then I don't think he wants to be here long-term. And you know that. You know he doesn't want to stay with the Red Sox, and you can plan accordingly and trade him and move on from him. So I think that is a potential solution here for both sides and would give some clarity to both sides moving forward. I mean, if you're Mookie, again, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, you're locking in money in an environment in Major League Baseball where big contracts and that type of money are not coming to anybody right now.
Well, think how many times that they've gone to arbitration, and this year they settled. And even when you hear him, compared to a guy like Chris Sale, who talks so passionately about playing here in the city this week in Fort Myers, it's always kind of a lukewarm response, right? So that's, to me, the most brilliant part of this that you've come up with this, is the Red Sox can essentially, you know, cast into the water and see whether or not Mookie Betts wants to bite. Because if he doesn't want that, because I think that's a great deal and it's good for him considering the landscape of the league right now for players, if he don't bite, he don't want to be here.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
Matt?
Yeah, I like this idea a lot, tying a buy-in into 2021. It gives the player a lot of options. I think Mookie Betts would want to be here if you offered him something worth his while. And that's the thing that I think the Red Sox haven't done up until this point, until they finally agreed on a contract, $20 million, making him the highest paid player ever in the second year of arbitration. But up until then, the Red Sox have done nothing but lowball offer this guy. So I think there's this misconception that Mookie Betts doesn't want to be here. Well, why don't you pay him what he's worth? Make him the highest paid player in baseball. He's a better player than Bryce Harper. He's a better player than Manny Machado. Granted, we don't know what those guys are going to get, but when they get their deal, beat it. Go out there and beat it and lock him in long term. Give him the opt out, give him that option. And then you're right, Jim. If he doesn't take that deal, if he doesn't take a deal that would make him the highest paid player in baseball, then okay, all of a sudden, yeah, he doesn't want to be here. And then you have to consider trading him.
So I actually have a theory. This is just a theory sort of on Mookie and why he might be a little lukewarm, or at least he might come off as lukewarm to Boston. And I don't know if we've talked about this or people have connected this, but we know, you know, Mookie's from the Nashville area in Tennessee. Who else on the team is from that area?
David Price.
David Price.
Hey, everybody.
David Price. Yeah, just go ahead. Take it.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Take it away. No. But so Price is from Murfreesboro. I was reading a story last night in the Tennessean about Mookie. Mookie actually spent part of his youth in Murfreesboro, and then his mom moved him to Brentwood, Tennessee. I think those guys are close, and David Price's experience here, regardless of what he says, you know, I love all you fans and all this other stuff, I don't think it's been the greatest, and I wonder if that sort of colors Mookie Betts in terms of how he feels about playing here long-term. You know,
I wouldn't doubt that.
You know, that seeing the way Price has been treated, you know, not just as a high-profile Red Sox free agent signing, but I think also for those guys, it also matters, you know, how he's sort of treated as a high-profile African-American athlete in Boston. I wonder if some of that plays into it with Mookie, if those guys have conversations about what the environment's like here and if whether this is a place you want to be long-term.
Oh, I can see that. I didn't know that. I guess I didn't know that he was from Tennessee. And obviously, look, for whatever you want to say about David Price, and Lord knows I have, I do think he's a good teammate. I think that he's well-respected
in
that clubhouse.
Guys like him.
That does make sense. And the other thing, too, is maybe he just comes off as a little bit tepid because he's a guy that has a lot of other interests. You know, like you see how passionate he is about bowling. He's a damn good bowler and Rubik's Cube and all that other kind of stuff. So maybe it just he comes off as somewhat aloof because I don't know. He doesn't take it as seriously as maybe some fans and some of the media around here do.
Yeah, but that's his personality, too. I mean, you know, he's a very understated guy. So
he's very guarded, though. That's the personality I think he gives us, Matt. Like, you talk to people around the team and people were there. Like, he's really guarded with the media, and I think he's really guarded with sort of his public persona. And to me, that also speaks to maybe, I don't want to say he's not comfortable here, but I think there's an element of wariness there that in this market, because I don't think we get his full personality.
Right. But if you make him the highest paid player in baseball and you give him that opt out after 2021, or you structure a deal that would work well for him, he's going to take that deal, right? I mean, he's not going to walk away from that in this market, right? Stop lowballing the guy. Give him the offer that he deserves. He's better than Harper. He's better than Machado. After Trout, he's probably the best position player in baseball. Pay him accordingly.
But yeah. If he doesn't take that, then you know that it's not about the money.
Right.
There's some other factor with your team and your market that gives him pause.
But that gives you 2 years to figure it out, because you could get a haul for him. You could trade him. You could do something. If you make that offer right now and you get the sense that, okay, we've offered him the, you know, the richest contract in the history of baseball. We've offered him an opt-out. He still won't take it. Time to cash in. You're not going to let him walk for a draft pick, are you?
No. But would you trade him this? Would you trade him this year?
No, you trade him next offseason.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
Jacob DeGrom is pissed off in New York with what's going on with him and the Mets. So I said before, because I've been down on the postseason performance for Mookie Betts. We now have more than 100 at bats, and really isn't all that great. So I would be willing to trade him for, say, Jacob DeGrom, who's pissed off at the New York Mets. I would have to think, though, just from a marketability standpoint, like that would be devastating to the Red Sox, because just not only how good he is, obviously, right? You know, MVP, but just from a marketability standpoint, that guy puts asses in seats. Like, if you lose him, it'd be like, oh, my God. Like, to offer that, I think that they should do it. Get ahead of it now, because if he doesn't want it, he obviously doesn't want to be here. Let's go to Dan in Rhode Island. You're first up here on Gaspar Murray on Mookie and Betts. Hello, Dan.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's up?
A little ball wash for Chris real quick. Chris, you seem like a mercurial type of guy. I love your takes. They're always well thought out, and usually you can back up your stuff. Which is, unfortunately, with Jim, you kind of like that too, but you work with two flamethrowers during the week. So, you know what I mean? It's a pleasure to talk to guys who actually talk and just don't throw stuff out there.
Appreciate that.
No problem. You kind of move the goalposts real quick. I want to talk about the future of baseball. And I think the way it's going is what you already said, Chris, is 20 good points. Shorter term, higher AAV, right? That seems to be the way it's going to go. But you talk about baseball as a whole in the future. What I see is, like, every year that goes by, right, the demographics change in terms of the average age seems to keep going up and not down with the baseball viewer. And it's going to get to a point, I think owners are already feeling, that's why you're seeing a lot of these guys not getting paid, is advertisers look between, what, 18 and 35 or 49, whatever it is, 18 to 35 and 25 to 49.
25-54, the male is, and males 25-54 is like the money demo for sports.
So when I'm going, every year that goes by, baseball doesn't get younger in terms of viewers. Advertisers are going to, the money's going to dry up eventually in that department. People will still go to games, but I think the only things that are keeping these things going is like the regional contracts with the TV, you know, because that's big bucks. You know, it just seems like it's a bomb waiting to go off, and I think it's going to come to a head when the next contract comes up. And I won't miss baseball one single iota, not at all.
Thanks, Dan. Well, even though it's like now my fourth sport in terms of what I care about and how much I watch it, like, I don't know, dog days of summer, what the hell else are you going to do? You know, cold beer, baseball, maybe a nice cold lemonade, listening to it on the transistor on the porch. Like, you still do need the game, as interminable as some of the games can be. No offense, McCarthy. Speaking of Matt McCarthy, he's going to get caught up here with the Sports Hub headlines. Breaking news on Kyrie Irving, whether or not he's playing tomorrow night in the useless NBA All-Star game. News on Anthony Davis, whether or not he wants to be here. So he's going to get you caught up with that. And Dustin Pedroia, is it a big ask when Dave Dombrowski says, oh, yeah, I know, we're counting on him for like 120 games this week? We'll touch on that as we continue to talk old-timey baseball here. First hour of Gaspar and Murray. You're on 98.5 in your transistor.
This is Gaspar and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Petey says he feels good. He feels good. Our medical reports on him are good. We're still not looking at a 150-game player. We're hopeful that he's a 125-game player at this point. We do feel we have some people that are solid that can fill in. The fill-in, if he plays 120, guys like Holt, guy like Nunez coming over there, even some depth with the Su-Wei Lin in our organization, we like a great deal. They are also capable of playing more games, that combination, but we're hopeful that Petey will be the guy.
The cartilage in my knee is great now, but the graft is the thing. You're putting somebody else's his bone in your body to get that to incorporate fully. You know, there's so many things that, you know, and going into it, I didn't know all that stuff. You know, I thought they were like, oh, you have you tore this, we can fix it. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. But I didn't know, you know, I didn't go to medical school, which probably could have, but, you know, I didn't know all that stuff at the time.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Focusing on the Red Sox, spring training, baseball-related stuff here in the first hour of the show today. So that is President of Baseball Ops, Dave Dombrowski, earlier this week saying, we expect Esser Bedroy to play 120 games this year. We have some depth there at second base. That's a big ask, considering the guy has, feels like no cartilage left in his knee.
You would say Triscuit knees.
Yeah, Triscuit knees. Yep, just ready to snap and, fall apart at any moment. The Triscuit's very dry, by the way, in case you don't know. But Dustin Pedroia, they're talking about the surgery, and sounds like he would have done things differently. Bottom line, 120 games, I'm sorry. Like, that's a almost ridiculous, astronomical ask, I think, for this guy coming off this, this knee issue that he's dealt with, this surgery, the fact he played three games last year. I hope for the best. If he's okay, at the very least, in terms of his offense, okay, I'd feel better about second base. That still feels like a hole. But 120 games, are you kidding me?
It does sound like a big ask, given the history, with the injury. And this is, it's a tough one. I mean, he had the cartilage regeneration, but also as part of that, he had the sort of, I'm drawing a blank here.
Bone graft.
It's not just the bone graft, but the thing Amari Stoudemire got. Microfracture
surgery.
He had the microfracture with that, too. And so it's just a big ask, I think, for Pedroia at this stage of his career as a 35-year-old. You know what I'm curious about? Just his value to the team. Is he going to be the same player defensively?
Well, no. That, I think, is...
Because he's outstanding defensively. And to me, that's his real value. I mean, he's great with the bat, don't get me wrong. But I think this team has plenty of offense. If he can just play defense the way he used to play, even if it's only for 100 games, that I think that's a big boost for them. Because I thought the defense last year at second base was atrocious.
Well, considering the surgery and what his range of motion is now going to be, I think that's... So that's where it really gets crazy. Like, he's not going to be what he was defensively. There's no way.
No way. And my concern is they think this is still going to be the Dustin Pedroia of old or something close to it. And they're going to give him as many opportunities over the course of the next 3 years, as many opportunities as he wants, it seems. But there's no long-term plan here because he's under contract for 3 years. What do you do at that point? You're going to, just keep rolling out the Brock Holtz and the Eduardo Nunez's of the world? Are you going to have to trade for Ian Kinsler, or something close to it for the next 3 years? They're going to keep giving him chances, and I get that the promise of having the real Dustin Pedroia is tantalizing. But let's be honest, there's a better chance that he plays three games again this year than 120. That surgery's no joke. Nobody's ever come back from it. Steven Wright, a knuckleball pitcher, can't stay on the field.
And he's already said he's not going to be the same again.
No, he said it will never be the same again. I feel like I've been dealing with a blown tire. You're a knuckleballer. You can't pitch with that. You can't kind of huck it up there to home plate, and you're going to go out there and play second base every single night? I have a hard time buying it. I hope it's true, but I have a hard time buying that he comes back and gives them much of anything for the next 3 years.
From a personality standpoint, do you have any concerns about him being around this team this year, considering they won it without him last year? And then, you go back a couple of years and he's at the top of the dugout yelling across to the dugout of the Orioles to Manny Machado, "Hey, that wasn't me." And I don't know. He seems like a man on an island, the way he's always kind of carried himself. He doesn't want to be a leader, but at times he carries himself as the little leader, credit Adam Jones. Do you worry about the mix at all?
And does that make him feel a little bit more isolated? If he's trying to get back on the field and he really can't play, does that, make him feel more, put him more on that island? I don't know. Maybe. He was around the team last year, and they seemed to enjoy his presence, I guess. So I'm not sure about that, but how does this affect them on the field too? How does this affect how they approach the next 3 years at that position?
Yeah, I mean
that's a long time to keep going with stopgap, right. Stopgap.
Maybe there's somebody like a Starlin Castro that you can go out and acquire, and if you find out that Pedroia can't do it, I root for Pedroia. I love the way he plays. I love the effort that he gives. He's had a great career. I just go back to the contract, and I think it's another bad contract by Ben Cherington. And I said this at the time, it's like you don't sign an undersized second baseman to an 8-year contract, because if he has an issue like this, which he's had with the knee, well, what position are you moving him to? Is he going to play first base? Is he going to DH? Like, what can he do for you if he's not 100% healthy? And given how hard Pedroia has played throughout his career, you knew that there was going to be a little bit of wear and tear on him. Why would you give that guy an 8-year deal? It just seemed like it's too long a deal. Now we're at 35, 36, 37, the end of the deal, and there are real questions about what he can give you and how often he can play. I mean, on another team, I would say, maybe you can give him some games at DH, but
not here.
Not on this team with their roster. So it's just kind of tough. It puts Pedroia in a tough spot.
Mike in Maine, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, hold on. Let me just get you off of speaker here. Right. So, hey, just wanted to call real quick about the contract situation, you guys. You know, I think it kind of all ties in here. Think about, you know, what's baseball's biggest complaint for most of these teams, right? They do these eight-year deals, and other than Manny Ramirez, who works out? I mean, you guys are talking about Pedroia right now. So, I mean, the players, I mean, when you look at other sports that are out there, don't the players have something to do with this? You know, this is the only sport without any sort of salary cap. And, you know, salaries absolutely skyrocketed since the early 2000s. So maybe it's just now catching up that some of these teams, you know, can't spend quite as much money because the markets that spend the big money have been burnt with big contracts, Red Sox, Yankees, you know, so on and so forth.
The Angels,
so
I wonder, yeah, and Mike, it's a good point. Angels with Albert Pujols is another one. So, I don't know, the players are complicit too. Like, look, yeah, I'm never
going to. That's gonna, a good
point. I'm always going to side with workers, grew up in a union family, but they are a little crazy for some of these guys thinking, like, oh, I'm only chasing a 10-year deal. Like, I don't know. You have to think from the business standpoint, too, with some of these teams, like how these guys have broken down and not lived up to that contract, like why they would want to shy away from that.
Yeah, and look, I don't know the specifics of negotiations for Harper and Machado, so I haven't read anything that says it's years that's holding it up that, oh, you know, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper each got offered $40 million AAV, but it's only a five-year deal or a six-year deal. It's not a 10-year deal. I mean, I haven't heard that. Maybe it's happening. That's not what I'm hearing, though. I mean, and I do agree generally with what he said. I mean, I think that in sports, you know, signing somebody to an eight-year deal is a big-time risk. You look at 10-year deals. I wouldn't sign anybody to a 10-year deal, so I get it. But I don't hear that these guys are being offered six- or seven-year deals for, like, $38 million a year. It seems like it's both ends. And also, that doesn't explain the whole market. So we can talk about Machado and Harper, and I think that's right. But what about all the other guys that are languishing out there, too? What about a Dallas Keuchel, somebody like that? It's like these guys aren't even getting, like, sniffs. It's like, here you go. Here's this, like, below. And when someone like Aaron Nola and Luis Severino, when those guys are signing deals that are clearly below market, there's something going on.
It's a perfect storm because you have the players, and they were complicit in this, and you have a guy like Craig Kimbrel asking for $6 million, which is absurd. But you also have, and Chris Sale made the point, his teams are just eating this money. And a lot of the teams are eating the luxury tax and the revenue sharing money, and they're not doing anything to get better. So you have a perfect storm of players asking for too much for too long, and now the owners are saying, no, we're going to keep this money for ourselves, and this is what you get. No market.
And
none.
You're right. And I'll say this. This is where I think the MLB Players Association messed up. And, you know, my long-running joke is that Tony Clark whiffed more with the MLB Players Association than he did with the Red Sox, which is pretty hard to do.
And that's a lot.
Considering in 275 at-bats, he whiffed 57 times with the Red Sox. But he whiffed worse on this deal. He basically allowed them to put in, the owners, a de facto salary cap.
Right.
But MLB, that is so much anathema to them, to the Players Association, to say salary cap, that they let them put one in without the name and then didn't get a floor.
Right.
So without a floor, you have a salary cap at the top and no floor at the bottom to force these teams to spend. It is the worst possible situation. Tony Clark blew this big time.
Matt McCarthy, I know you have to run, so appreciate you joining us here in the baseball conversation. You got to get down to Fairfield County in Connecticut and get all fancy. But you have begun a new season of Hardcore Baseball at 98.5sportshub.com.
Yep, first episode out this past week. Jimmy Stewart, your executive producer, joined us so he could brag about how he was the most right about the 2018 Red Sox. Chris Hatfield checked in on Sox farm system as well. So we will be going all throughout the season with the Hardcore Baseball talk.
Hardcore Baseball. Check it out, 98.5sportshub.com. And like I've said before, lives up to its name. One listen, you'll feel like you just rode a horse after you listen to Hardcore Baseball at 98.5sportshub.com.
It gets aggressive.
If you didn't hear, the NFL has settled with Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed. And how does Tom Brady's Deflategate case prove that the NFL knew they were going to lose in court to Kaepernick? I'll explain next here on Gaspar Murray, 98.5sportshub.
Stay tuned for more Gaspar and Murray on 98.5sportshub. This is Gaspar and Murray on 98.5sportshub.
The NFL said today it has reached a settlement agreement with quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick says the league colluded to keep him off the field the past 2 years following his sideline protests beginning in 2016. No settlement numbers have been given.
Well, not officially, but Mike Freeman, Bleacher Report, tweeting yesterday after this story broke, again, the NFL settling with Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed, who's working with the Carolina Panthers. But Mike Freeman tweeting that he had talked to some unnamed NFL sources that said that the settlement number for Kaepernick alone is somewhere between $60 and $80 million. Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So I mentioned before the break, Tom Brady's Deflategate case, it proves the NFL knew they'd lose in court to Kaepernick. It comes down to this for me, Chris. If you look at the history of the NFL when it comes to lawsuits, players, coaches, Tom Brady, Deflategate, Ezekiel Elliott, Ray Rice, Sean Payton, and this is just within the last 10 years or so, they see these cases until the end or until the player folds in Brady's case. They don't give up. They see this through. They folded here because they knew they were going
to
lose.
Or they didn't want to go through discovery, which would have been so embarrassing to them. You know, I mean, I actually think it's the latter. I think it's that they didn't want the discovery process to happen and that they would have been humiliated by some of the things that came out that either owners said or owners did. It would have like, I don't want to say brand killing, but definitely brand damaging.
Well, they're definitely, they're more than concerned about the bad PR that they continue to get when it comes to really anything, domestic violence with Kareem Hunt. You know, it seems like there's always a case or two per year that feels like they just turn a blind eye to anything domestic violence related. And just how they handle themselves. That they are talking to Adam Silver, you know, that story had that came out this week, that they're talking to the NBA's commissioner, Adam Silver, to try to, like, woo him and say, like, hey, you want to come do this gig for us? They're trying to rebrand. They're trying to make themselves look like the softer, gentler, more family-friendly NFL from a, you know, just a business standpoint out of New York. I think this is part of it. You know, they realized, like, look, there's some things here, whether it's emails, texts, cell phones they'd maybe have to put over in discovery, like you say, that would have been real bad for the Shield.
Oh, I agree. And I'll tell you, another reason I think they were able to do this is just my opinion. Some of the real hardline, good old boy owners, they're not around anymore. Bob McNair.
Oh, Jerry Richardson for
exactly.
One.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the two guys I was thinking. I mean, Bob McNair, I mean, unfortunately, he passed away. You never want someone to, you know, expire. But he passed away, so he's not around. He was the guy that had the comment about, you know, the inmates running the prison, and then your guy, Jerry Richardson.
Oh, you mean that guy. You mean that he was the first name that came to mind. Like, okay, what would be out there? What would see the light of the day? You know, considering what happened with Jerry Richardson and all the evidence that was there and how he's no longer the owner of the Carolina Panthers, you don't think there's an email or two that refers to someone as boy or, you know, like, come on.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that would have been so embarrassing for them. The other thing when I think about this, Jim, is I think we're sort of all assuming that this is tied to Kaepernick, but it was Kaepernick and Greg Reed. And I almost wonder if some of the more damaging stuff.
Eric Reed, you mean?
Eric Reed. I almost wonder if some of the more damaging stuff did not involve Eric Reed. Because remember, Eric Reed was the one who went to the Bengals and was specifically asked by Mike Brown, the owner of the team, you know, do you plan to kneel? And then they didn't sign him.
Right.
So everybody's assuming that all the evidence that compelled them to do this was from Kaepernick's side. It might have been more from Eric Reed than it was from Kaepernick.
Yeah, I got to say, though, I feel a little bit ripped off just as, you know, getting to do this for a living. And, you know, I like the salacious details of stuff like, oh, man, I would have loved to have seen what would have been out there and would have seen the light of day. There's no way Kaepernick ends up back in the league now, right?
I think, you know, from a football standpoint, I think teams in the league have, you know, moved on. They've engaged in this ruse for so long that I think that they've made it reality, the fact that he can't help a team and he can't play. And now he's been out for a while, so that would, you know, sort of really make it hard to bring him back in. Although the Redskins, when they had the situation with Alex Smith, brought in Josh Johnson, who'd been out of the league. Like, I think I read he hadn't thrown a pass since, like, 2011 or something. But I just can't – I mean, I can't see him coming back. If anything, here's my thing on Cap at this point. You know, obviously he's made a huge impact socially. I just have no idea, you know, what he wants to do football-wise. And so now that he got some sort of settlement from the league financially, what's he looking for? Does he want to play football again? Now that he got the money, would he go to the AAF and say, hey, you know what, I don't need whatever to play, you know?
There was a story out there this week said that he was looking for $20 million to play
that
in
that. Seems a little high, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I will say more than anything else that I can't say I'm surprised at, because, you know, we just live in, like, this unfortunate outrage culture now. You know, with this story, for the most part, you only had one side pissed. You know, those that were upset of him kneeling and that kind of twisted this into saying it was anti-military and so on. And now you have people that were supporting him looking at him as a sellout because he took this settlement. I don't know.
Really?
Seen that. No, so now people just, you know, outrageously pissed on both sides, because, of course, that's the world that we live in now. Quickly, let's squeeze in John in Plymouth before we get to the Sports Hub Celtics show with some breaking news today about Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. So just something I was thinking about with the Colin Kaepernick collusion and his settlement, pretty much like from everything that I've been listening to on NFL Live and ESPN, people were saying that overall he wouldn't have won the collusion case, but or is most likely he wouldn't pretty much, but that one of the reasons that they settled is that the NFL owners didn't want to kind of testify, and they didn't want to have like people kind of like pretty much people learning inner workings of how the league works. And that people on Kaepernick's half were pissed that he didn't kind of pursue the case more to the point where like that kind of stuff came out. So I'm thinking, what if they might have found, like, it kind of was both sides. They both found stuff on each other, and they were like, all right, like, we know you have people telling you to keep pursuing this, but we've got some stuff on you, so let's just both agree on the settlement and both kind of opt out here, because we both have stuff that we could that would tarnish us if this did go to trial. You know, like, I feel like he said that he wanted, that it wasn't about the money, and that he wanted to kind of expose the league, and that I feel like if they had stuff on him and Eric Reed, too, as well, both sides, that was kind of explaining them kind of just being like, you know what, let's just get out of here, let's take the money.
Well, I mean, here's another, again, I'm not a lawyer, so now this is all like speculation, but I wonder if part of it too, from the standpoint of Kaepernick and Eric Reed, was that they felt that somehow their case was diminished because a good thing happened. Eric Reed signed with the team and got a 3-year extension.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, so maybe that sort of played into it, and they can leverage the NFL not wanting the discovery, and then you get the money. And look, I understand what people are saying, but the reality is I think Kaepernick has lived up to his pledge to give over $1 million to charities that address the issues that he's concerned with. So I would be really surprised if whatever he ended up getting in a payout, if some of that didn't end up going to charity.
You know me well enough to know how cynical I am about the world and how it works, Chris. So I've always looked at it this way for my whole life. When an entity settles like that, it really just means you lost, or you just didn't want to have the bad stuff see the light of day, but you really lost. Whether it's the Catholic Church or Michael Jackson and the kids or the NFL in this case, you settled because you don't want the real bad stuff to see the light of day.
You paid to make a problem go away.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, time to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show. A lot going on here. It sounds like Chris Gasper's impassioned plea to Kyrie Irving is unfortunately falling on deaf ears. We'll explain more about that coming up right after the Sports Hub headlines as we welcome in Tim McCone. Oh, we're still staying hardcore. We lose baseball boy here, but we get a little McBone action here. He's going to let you know what's going on with Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and more. And then right to the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio. The Patriots have won their 6th Super Bowl title.
This is the home of the 6-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Beasley Media Group Station.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.